What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. If you're listening on Friday, we're 48 hours away. As Pete Carroll would say, the day before. And if it's Saturday, it's the day before. And if it's Sunday, it's Super Bowl Sunday, you know? Which kind of sucks. I mean, it's awesome, but also sneaky shitty because that means football's over. But it's also positive because, luckily with me, I love the combine. I love the free agency. I love the draft. You know, I'll talk storylines and OTAs. Take a little break in the summer, maybe, and then get back on the horse, you know, around late July. You know, the Hall of Fame, and then boom, season's here. So the good thing about the NFL is it never stops. But for as great as Super Bowl Sunday is, and I'm going to dive into this game, because on paper, this game is pretty damn good. But I think it also does symbolize the season's over, which sucks, you know? Not to get sentimental here, but it's kind of sad. You know, we got to wait a decent amount of time for another game. But we'll dive into the Super Bowl. You know, this Tom Brady, Gronkowski, are they going to play their last game together? I think it's definitely possible. The Combine banned a top 20 player in Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State because he had a domestic violence issue in his past. And I have some thoughts on that. Jason Garrett did not get a contract extension. He is going in to coach in his last season with just 1 year remaining. You know, as they say in the business, a lame duck coach. Some thoughts on that, and then we know we'll get into the Middlecoff mailbag. I do it at the end of the show for those that haven't been listening. For those that have, appreciate you. Appreciate you guys keep listening. Tell your friends, subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff. But you can slide into my DMs on Instagram, at John Middlecoff. Just slide up in them, and I'll answer your questions about football on the show. All my social medias, Twitter, Instagram is just my name, at John Middlecoff. MIDDLEKAUFF. Easiest, I always say, easiest way to get a hold of me. But on paper, this game is awesome. There's just no disputing that. You have the modern day Walsh and Montana in Belichick and Brady. And let's call it what it is. It's those guys are on steroids version of Walsh and Montana. Walsh and Montana, or Montana was 4-0, right, in Super Bowls. Well, Brady has five. He's 5-3. Guess what's better than 4-0? If he would have been 4-3, that's better than 4-0. Why? Because that means you got to 7 Super Bowls. This is Brady's 9th. So whether he wins or loses, his legacy is established. He's the GOAT. Getting to 9 Super Bowls is exponentially better than getting to 4, even if you win them all. Plus, Brady's just won more. Here's the other thing. Belichick is Walsh on steroids. Love Bill Walsh. But Bill Walsh kind of had to tap out at the end of his career because mentally he was drained. Does Belichick ever get fazed by stress? He's like not human. So again, we are watching Walsh, Montana on steroids meets PEDs. They're basically the Barry Bonds of what that is, what we're watching right now. Now, you could make some funny jokes about cheating or whatever. Listen, everyone was taping signs. When I first got into the NFL, it's kind of when the green dot came. I found out I didn't know much about it, but everyone was doing it. So they were not alone. So I've never held them out. And it turns out Ryan Grigson turning them in for Deflategate was clown material. And I think it's been proven since Brady after Deflategate and Grigson getting canned, who's on the right side of history of that one. Here's the other thing. Sean McVay, I just looked up. I've been trying to figure out his comp. I think the closest thing to that Sean McVay that parallels what we're dealing with here is Pat Riley in 1981. And he was about 36 years old. Might have been, you know, 36, 37. So obviously McVay's 33 here. And he won that championship at a very young age. I'd say 36 in 1981 is the equivalent of like 24 now. I mean, you just were not getting hired to these jobs in your 30s in that day and age. What McVay's doing is unheard of, unprecedented. If he wins a Super Bowl, like I live in the Bay Area. Bruce Bochy's won 3 championships. He's a really big deal around here. He's not a rock star. Sean McVay wins a Super Bowl in LA, in Hollywood. I mean, you're talking about the modern day Pat Riley. He looks good. Obviously, he doesn't wear suits during the game. Wears them to the game. 3-piece looks pretty good. He'd be Hollywood. I almost said, like, I was saying this on my other podcast earlier this week, you know, like, you know, he'll win the Super Bowl and then go on Letterman. I'm like, God, I sound like I'm 50. Letterman hasn't been on the, I don't know where he'd go, but he will be, like, what's crazy is the NFL, like most leagues, baseball, basketball, football, the faces of the league are players, right? Forever it was Brady and Manning. Now it's like Brady, you could throw in like the Russell Wilsons and even the Todd Gurleys and the Macs. And the, I mean, there are a ton of great players. Beside Belichick, Sean McVay is clearly one of the faces of the league. And that's not really going to change win or lose. He might take a little hit if he gets blown out, but even then, like at 33 getting the Super Bowl, he's earned a lot of equity. But I'm telling you, in the LA market, Hollywood, you're a Super Bowl champion. You know why we love winners in California and they call us quote-unquote front runners? And I've lived in Philly and, you know, I've been to New York and I've actually never been to Boston, but those towns embrace losing a little more. Not that they like it, but they don't flinch when you lose. Here, we just don't care. Well, in the crazy cold storms going on around America right now, you know, it's minus 50 some places, all these wind chills, 65 degrees outside. If I wanted to today and I wasn't recording this podcast, I could have gone and played golf. We got options. So, yeah, I'm not going to watch crappy teams. And in L.A., the weather up where I live in Northern California is dramatically worse relative to Southern California. So you think I can go play? It's sunny down there, basically 365. So you better win in LA. Like, you gotta be the Lakers and have Magic Johnson and then, you know, Kobe and LeBron. Like, the Rams are gonna have to win for people to care, or else they just won't come. So that's part of the deal. You can say what you want, but a lot of it is just we got sunshine and we have the beach. You know, I don't necessarily have the beach, but people in LA definitely have the beach. I got a beach, but we got great white sharks living in them, and you got crazy waves, and you kind of got to be crazy to surf, but that's a whole different topic. But my point is, like, this is an incredible Super Bowl on paper. With the Patriots dynasty, even though they're not really, like, they don't have much to gain or lose, they definitely can gain something, because you win six Super Bowls, they'd be favored to win next year. But to me, the Rams will feel like, God, are they the... Especially in Hollywood, do we have like the Pat Riley version of what it was in 1981 in the NFL with Sean McVay? The winner will be, I know he can't win the Super Bowl MVP, but if they win, he will feel like the MVP of the Super Bowl. People are going to ask, like, Middlecoff, who you taking? Who you betting on? You know, listen, I would bet strictly on the Rams with the 2.5 because America is clearly betting on the Patriots. I think this is a coin flip game. You can't underestimate just how good some of the Rams players are. Clearly, you can't bet against the Patriots, but they play in tight games. But the Rams have some special players. They also have some guys. What makes them unique is just guys that can make big-time, just huge game-changing plays. Like, on any given play, and I was at the Super Bowl 3 years ago now, when Von Miller made the MVP. And when you have a guy like him, maybe he won't make a play. But there's a chance that he could have a 3-sack game with a strip, you know, a forced fumble that leads to a touchdown. That's what Aaron Donald brings to the table. Like, at any moment, Marcus Peters can catch a tip pass and take it the other way, right? At any moment, Todd Gurley can take it to the house. At any moment, Jared Goff on a play-action pass can hit Brandon Cooks deep. So, and they clearly have a coach. So they have the weaponry to just... to just play with the Patriots, even if the Patriots play well. Like, to play with the Patriots, I'm going to assume they're going to play well. You have to have just elite players. Now, you'd be like, Middlecoff, it's a Super Bowl. Of course they got good players. But they got truly, like, max out guys. I'm not saying Marcus Peters is, but he can make, like, max corner level plays. He can also give them up. Same with Tlaib. You know, same with Ndamukong Suh. Hell, Fowler, the guy they traded for, who was kind of a bust from Jacksonville, has made some plays. I know Russell Wilson, I was watching some of the things he was saying. He thinks he's been a big X factor, and he'd know. He's seen those guys on tape a lot. You can't ever bet against the Patriots. You can never bet against their coaching staff as the best, arguably, in league history. Not just game plans, but then adjusting. Even if they're down, we've seen several years ago, the 28-3, that won't faze them. But I kind of keep leaning back. It just kind of feels... The Rams were a sexy pick before the season. They then lived up to the hype by starting so fast. Almost like they got bored a little later in the season. But, you know, I'm not necessarily picking them to win. I will take them with the points. But I think this is one of the better Super Bowls on paper, you know, probably in years. Because the Super Bowl last year, on paper, wasn't as good. Now, the team that you all thought was going to lose won the game with Foles. But just on paper, this truly feels like, damn, you can't miss this. Now, it's Super Bowl, you weren't going to miss it anyway, but it doesn't get much more exciting than the matchup we have. Sometimes I think in sports, and it's probably true in anything in life, we just take things for granted, take players for granted, just stardom for granted, you know. Baseball has been struggling for a long time. Remember the last couple years of Barry Bonds, everyone crushing him? Baseball would die for a player that interesting now. They would pay millions upon millions of dollars to have a player that invoked that much emotion. You know, LeBron has helped, you know, the NBA for sure these last 10, 12 years of just being so polarizing. And I think we have that with Brady right now. And we're almost at the point where we just assume, God, he just TB12, eats kale smoothies, avocado ice cream. You know, he doesn't drink beer. He's just a machine. Well, it is pretty incredible, and it almost doesn't make sense. Mom got me the TB12 book a while ago. I haven't actually read it. I just leave it on the countertop. But it's just like, is this really sustainable? Clearly, his arm's still solid. He's never been a great athlete, so he hasn't really had to adapt. But we've seen, and I think Charles Barkley's been using this term forever, and it's kind of just in our, you know, vernacular now when it comes to talking about athletes, is Father Time's undefeated. And our most recent example was obviously Peyton Manning, Brady's great rival. Fell off a cliff. It just happened overnight. Now, it's a little different. He'd had multiple neck surgeries, missed a year for those neck surgeries, but then he came back and he was fine. And then one year just was never the same. Eventually, Brady's going to get hurt, and his body is not going to recover. I don't give a shit what Guerrero's giving him, how many pieces of kale he eats every day. At 42, 43, 40, it's going to happen. I don't know when. He might win this Super Bowl, win the next year's Super Bowl. It might go on for a couple more years. But we're coming, you know, if this is a golf round, it's hard to say. I mean, we're 1,000,000% on the back nine. Are we on hole 16 or 17? We're not on hole 13. You know, I mean, this is coming to an end sometime soon. And it's going to be with an injury. It's going to happen, and his body's not going to recover. So I do think whether you hate him, whether you love him, whether you despise the Patriots, what they stand for, at least embrace just watching greatness. Because it doesn't come around, like for as great as Peyton Manning was, he couldn't do this. He never did this. Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, their careers don't hold a candle to this. It's pretty remarkable. And I do, one thing that is finite, if I was a betting man, which I am, I would bet against Gronkowski ever playing another game for the Patriots. They literally traded him last year, and Gronk said, screw you, I'll retire before I play for the Lions. So, you know, Belichick's not going to be able to trade him this year because he will say the same thing. Will they cut him? That 100% would be a possibility. I also think there's a chance he just retires and at least just takes a year off. Now, maybe he misses it. He's still relatively young. It's not like he's 36 years old. But he's had so many injuries. And just looking up some stats this year, he had 3 touchdowns this season. That's tied for the lowest in his career. And the year that he had 3 touchdowns, he played 8 games. This year, he played 13. Now, he doesn't ever really play 16 games anymore. But he used to, if you would have played 13 games, he'd get you 8 or 9 touchdowns. He's not quite what he used to be when he was getting 15, 16 touchdowns a season. But 3 touchdowns? Now, he's still a great blocker, but you think he wants to keep doing this and block? He gets paid to catch touchdowns. And that's what made him famous, the Gronk spike, catching balls from Brady. I think he ends up retiring after this game, maybe not right after this game, depending if they win or lose. But this is the last time you're ever going to see Brady and Gronk. Now, he doesn't really throw to him anymore because Gronk can't get open, but it's over. I mean, Belichick knew it was over last year, But Gronk had some leverage because he refused for the trade. So they kind of just kept him. And it was Brady's guy, and clearly they liked him. He's a living legend. But just, you hate him, you love him, just enjoy him, because this might be it. And I know, we've been saying that forever. Eventually, it's going to be it. And this might be it. Okay, let's get into an interesting story here about the NFL Combine. Not that far away, I think a month away. And they have a new policy. And let me just get something that's going to kind of shape the way I think about this. I'm not a huge fan having someone that makes his living off social media. I've seen the way people just screw around and mess with you in comments, complaining, the comment section of articles, to if I have a tweet, what the responses are, to let Twitter dictate when people freak out and there's quote-unquote outrage, to let that dictate the way you do business. Because I think you can often get that wrong. There's a small percentage of Americans that are actually on Twitter. I think it's like under 25% of the country is on Twitter. Then the amount of people that actually tweet. So you're letting a silent minority kind of dictate what you're doing. And anytime there's controversy in the corporate world, people are going to freak out. So the domestic violence that has kind of been a recurring theme in the NFL, even though I think I've read stats that, you know, NFL players relative to the rest of the population are way less likely to commit domestic violence. But regardless, I'm not trying to defend anything. The domestic violence thing is so black and white. I've never met a normal person with any common sense, not on social media. And again, most people with common sense on social media will agree with me that if you hit a woman and you're a guy, a midget, let up to an NFL football player, and when I say midget, I mean like just a smaller human, like you're a loser, you deserve to go to jail. It's really that simple. But the NFL is a business. They have one goal. Really two, but the goals go hand in hand. One's to win, and two is to make money. And really, making money is one, and if you win, you're going to make more money. Their job is not to be the moral compass for society. So if their players screw up, they'll cut them or maybe not cut them. If a guy's good enough, they usually won't. And if a guy's talented enough, he's going to get several chances. If the guy sucks, they'll get rid of him. That's the way the world works. Welcome to society in America. The more talented you are at your job, the more you can be an idiot and get in trouble. I mean, it's really that simple. If you produce, you'll get chances. And obviously, pro sports is proof of that. So I never get mad. Like, if Kareem Hunt gets another shot here in a month, should he never get another shot? And I hate domestic violence. Again, we all do. But I don't watch football to have these guys teach my kids life lessons. But here's the reality. If you had an incident in college, like Joe Mixon did and Tyreek Hill did, you are going to get a job in the NFL. So the NFL, I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, recently, set a policy that if you are arrested for domestic violence and you are invited to the combine, you will not be allowed to go. This has to be the dumbest rule to like, see, we are standing behind domestic, we will not allow it. Well, this Jeffrey Simmons that, let me read what Tom Pelissero wrote. Simmons was arrested in 2016 after a physical altercation with a woman. Williams was arrested in 2017 for an altercation involving a woman. They are the only two known to be barred, or excuse me, two different guys. So two different instances. I'm just talking about Simmons. There was Preston Williams of Colorado State, who's also a good player, is also not allowed at the combine. I don't know that much about Preston Williams, so I'm really just using Jeff Simmons, but they both fit in this example. So bottom line, they've both been arrested for physically either hitting, kicking, something physical with a woman, domestic violence. And they're the only two known to be barred under this year, sources say. So they're the two guys the NFL is not letting. Here's the reality. Both guys are going to get drafted. 100% Jeffrey Simmons is going in the first round. So I would imagine the NFL won't let him go to the comp. They probably won't even let him go to the draft. This guy is going to be on a team. Not just going to be on a team, is going to go really high. I would understand it if we are not going to let him play in the league, if that was a stance they took, though I would disagree with it. I would say, okay, it's understandable, but this is stupid. This is like putting lipstick on a pig. Like, what are you doing? The teams are going to fly this guy to their team anyway. It's not like you're barring them from meeting with them or go to their pro day. He's going to be in your league. So if anything, let these guys go to the combine to meet with teams and coaches. You just want to cover your ass because when the combine's on NFL Network on Saturday afternoon, that they might, you know, now that Mayock's gone, Daniel Jeremiah might bring this up. I just don't understand it. Because again, these players will be in your league come this fall. Simmons will be a first-round pick in this league. Like, that is going to happen. It makes no sense. And too often in society, again, you let social media dictate what you do. You try to cover your ass. It's just kind of fraudulent. It's just stupid. It makes no sense. And I get it. Sometimes you do have to react to people freaking out. I do understand it, though I'm against it because I think it's usually pretty hollow. This is extremely hollow because, again, both these guys are going to get drafted. As I've been heard from multiple scouts, I know Lance Zierlein, a lot of people have talked about it on some boards. You know, some people in the media, they have him in the top 10. This guy's an elite player. So to not let him go to the combine, like, woo, you really got one there, Raj. You nailed that one, owners. And again, I never blame them for giving these guys second chances. I would. You know, because there's a certain segment of this population that was like, Reuben Foster, throw him in jail. Turns out he was innocent. And they're also the same people that freak out then about mass incarceration. What are we doing? Well, you're the ones that want to throw all these guys in jail. Turns out a lot of them turn out to be young minority guys. You just don't want to give them a second chance? You know? Now, again, I'm kind of a hypocrite too. I would not give these guys second chances if they weren't good. But, I mean, that's part of the deal. The NFL isn't for everyone. You know, I want better players. You know, maybe I got a little Al Davis in me. I'm not as bothered by that. And I hate domestic violence. Disgusted by it. Like we all are. But to not allow these guys go to the combine is just beyond stupid. It makes no sense. And it's actually kind of counterproductive to the problem. One interesting nugget that came out on Thursday, it was reported, I think, by Schefter, and then even Rap Sheet kind of piggybacked off it, that Jason Garrett, who is heading into his final year on his five-year $30 million. So just in the last 5 years, he's made $30 million. He was a millionaire before that. He also played in the NFL for a while. So Jason Garrett can feed his family. That Jason Garrett will not get a contract extension. He will coach this year as a lame duck coach. I've always found it fascinating, especially recently, with how much players make, especially in the NFL, so many players are definitely like year to year, regardless how much they make because of the contract structure. Why teams are so into giving guys extensions just to have like, well, he's going into his lame duck year. We think we might fire him after this year if he doesn't make a legit run, but we just have to give him an extension for optics. So the players know. I don't even think the players care. Like, Jerry Jones is right doing this. And Jason Garrett, I don't blame him. Like, most of America were at-will employees. Like, I deal with ad agencies or whatever. They can yank an ad plan anytime they want. Most of you can get fired, and maybe you get, like, 2 weeks' pay, but you're not, like, contract workers. Like, we feel bad. Like, how did he not? How are they going to make him? Now, no one's really saying this because of Jason Garrett, but we've said it before, like, you can't make him a lame duck coach. Why not? Players do it all the time. If you win, you'll get a contract. You've done it before. I don't really think this is that big of a deal. I never understand. You see it in college football. You see it in the NFL too. It happened to Marvin Lewis last year. Now, with Marvin, you know, the Bengals were so terrible, so kind of giving him like a golden parachute. I get it. But with Jason, if you're Jason, you're not signing another $6 million contract. The going rate, I've been to the playoffs a couple times, is like hell. You know, look how shitty Gruden is, and he's making 10. So if you're Jason, like, I'm only signing a 10-year contract, or excuse me, a $10 million contract. And if you're Jerry, like, I'm not paying you $10 million. You win. And Jason's like, well, maybe I have a team to win. I'm just shocked that more coaches don't play it out. And especially because they've made so much money, it's not like, I think a lot of us, when we get into these situations, if you ever get to, you know, in an industry where you do sign contracts, you're looking for security, because there's a big difference if you're only making, you know, $150,000. So if you're signing, I'll just use an example, like a radio contract. If I'm going to sign a radio contract, I really fight for that second year. If I'm making 200 grand a year, well, that's a big difference. If you're making 6 million a year, like, that's the thing about coaches. Jason Garrett saw every penny, whether he was going to get fired 2 years ago or coach the whole thing out, of that $30 million. It's why I never have that much compassion for head coaches when they get fired, because typically they deserve it, one. Two, because if you win, you don't get fired, unless you're Marty Schottenheimer with A.J. Smith. But they're also, especially in this day and age, they're so well compensated that they're the richest. I mean, do you know the percent of, like, rich business owners, that make $6 million in salary? It's one thing to, like, have all your expenses interwoven into your business. It's another $6 million in salary, and he's got no liability, and it's guaranteed. So I really don't think it's that big of a story, but it is a story, but I'm just like, so what? I mean, Jerry's doing the right thing. Go prove it. Jason's done it before, and it worked. I think the best case scenario for the Cowboys this year is obviously you win the Super Bowl, but Jason outcoaches some guys in the NFC. Like, just making the playoffs, to me, probably gets him fired. Now, the interesting wrinkle here is Kellen Moore is 29, 30 years old. What if they lose in, like, the first round of the playoffs, but have just an incredible season on offense? Is Kellen Moore the next Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, the next young kind of superstar coach? Played for Chris Peterson. His dad was a high school coach. He's basically like a coach on the field as a player. He was good enough somehow to play 5 years in the NFL despite not being able to throw it 25 yards. So I think he's a guy to keep an eye on. And probably, to me, for Jason to get a big extension, probably would have to make the Super Bowl. If he doesn't make the Super Bowl, maybe if he loses like a walk-off field goal in the NFC Championship game, it kind of feels like this is going to be Jason Garrett's last year, and that's the right move by Jerry. Make him prove it to you. You know, I know you love him. I know you're personally invested in the human. You've known him forever. But you've also paid him for his services. Like, there's a couple times he's made the playoffs. You paid him for those years. You paid him $6 million. Now, is he a little under market value? Probably. But part of getting him to market value would be to give him an extension, and I don't know if I'm ready to do that yet. So I think Jerry should start kind of a new trend. Less and less, like, if you don't think the guy's the guy, and he hasn't won a Super Bowl, you don't need to give out hollow contract extensions. Make the guy coach out the season. Okay, let's end it with this. Keep it a little shorter this week. I know we're all getting ready for the Super Bowl. And let's bang out some Middlecoff mailbag questions. Slide up into my DMs at John Middlecoff on Insta, and I'll answer. Okay, longtime listener. Can you give me some honest feedback on why the 49ers drove Harbaugh out of town? Reports still just generalize the relationship between York and Balky with Jim. As a 49er fan from Concord, California, my neighbor, my buddies and I still ask the question why they didn't keep Harbaugh. I've never got like a concrete answer. I think it is, for the most part, we kind of know. It's legitimately just egos, infighting. Harbaugh-Balky did not get along. Harbaugh did not treat Jed kind of like you should treat an owner when you're trying to get a contract extension. The Niners did think he was a little overrated. I think every story that's been written, there's pieces of it that are true. I don't know if there's just a black and white answer. This sounds crazy now, but at the time, I think that they thought that Jim Tom Sula could be better. I know they thought that Jim Tom Sula could be an upgrade over Jim Harbaugh. Now, that was proven to not just be wrong, but to be set the franchise back. But you know, ego and infighting, I think that leads the majority of relationships ending in the NFL between coaches and general managers. Them just fundamentally not getting along. Egos getting in the way. People not being able to work together. Probably happens in any office, right? But any business that is this public, when you're making that much money, when you then win and then you lose, and even the Niners, I mean, lose. They went 8-8 in Harbaugh's last year. So the worst season they had was 8-8. Do you know what they'd sign up for 8-8? I mean, they just coached the Senior Bowl. So I think they learned a lesson that you got to deal with a coach that's a little different, that's tough. And I think Kyle's different because he's younger, but I don't think he's the easiest guy to deal with on a day-to-day. And, you know, he's opinionated. He's got some, I don't say this in a mean way, but like a dick, you know, and all coaches are to a point, in the sense that they don't sleep that much. They're just on edge. They're just, you know, they don't treat you like your mom does when you're sick, when you're 10 years old. They're not warm and cuddly. You know, Pete Carroll, you know, is probably a rare guy. Even Andy Reid, I've been around him, you know, a lot, and you know, he's a phenomenal human. He can get mad, you know. I mean, it's a high pressure job, so coaches can they're just on edge. I mean, I just really think it's that simple. So I think hopefully they've learned from that, and it was just a crazy situation. You usually just, I don't know if we'll ever quite, we really hadn't seen one probably since Marty Schottenheimer and AJ Smith. And then probably going back to Jimmy Johnson. Now, Jimmy Johnson was different because he was winning Super Bowls, but it's not the first time, and it certainly won't be the last time. I remember reading articles and hearing Colin discuss a few years back that veteran NFL coaches hated seeing Pete Carroll succeed in Seattle, coming out of college and winning a Super Bowl in a relatively quick turnaround. Obviously, Russell Wilson played a big part. It got me wondering, do you think veteran NFL coaches and personnel scoffed at seeing Cliff Kingsbury get the head coaching job in Arizona? Is it something they discuss amongst each other? Does it put any kind of target on Kingsbury's back? That's a good question. Just wondering if it bothers guys in the league. I think 100%. Anytime guys in any business, right, get passed up for people that they think didn't put in the time or didn't take the proper route, I think it's jealousy now. I think a lot of people are going to be jealous, as they were Pete Carroll, as they were with Sean McVay, as they were with Kyle Shanahan, as they will with Cliff Kingsbury, as they will with Matt LaFleur. And all these hires are not going to work. But just because you have a job and you're assistant coach, that does not mean that you ever deserve the opportunity to become a head coach. You don't deserve anything in life. And in a job like the NFL, do you know what matters? Like, you do have to sell yourself a little bit. Like, dealing with the media has never been more important. Obviously, winning matters the most, but you got to be able to deal with the media. So you better have an agent that kind of props you up. And then you better produce. You know, people better respect you in the league. But you can't go to an interview and kind of bumble your way around and expect to get hired in this, you know, kind of landscape of the league. And I think that's what held Vic Fangio back. Now, the difference is Vic's work was so good for so long, he was bound to get an opportunity sooner than later. But I think he's a good example that kind of looks down. I don't want to use Vic personally because I don't know him. But I'm just saying, that type guy that gets in their 60s that never gets a chance. Like, usually, like in anything in life, it falls on the person. Now, there are probably things going against you. You know, maybe your personality, there's somewhat of a perception that can just be wrong on guys. But for the most part, think about this. In life, perception of someone that you've heard about in a potential business deal, you know, your wife's friend, whatever. Just anyone that you've ever heard information about. Let's say it's negative. How often is that perception wrong? I'd say a smaller percentage. Is it safe to say like under 20%? For the most part, you're like, oh, I can see where she said this about him. I can see where Bill told me not to deal with this guy. It's usually what happens. And it usually happens with coaches. Now, I'm not saying, again, that I don't like the LaFleur hire. You know, people wouldn't hire Arians and Zimmer forever. But do you know what's the two things about those two guys that are clearly really rough around the edges? They are really, really good football coaches. They are elite at their job. I mean, Arians is an all-time great play caller. Zimmer is probably the second best defensive mind in the league beside Belichick. So, you know, it's just, they were so good at their job that they've been good. They also benefited Arians benefited from just kind of the perfect combination of the GM drafting a bunch of good players. Same with Zimmer doesn't draft the players in Minnesota. So, you know, I think it's a tough question, and I think there's I think it's more jealousy. I think there's a lot of jealousy, but all these coaches have agents now. So the agents run the hiring process. So if you're a coach, an assistant coach making $2 million and you're a coordinator and you're not getting any interviews, you're paying your agent 3% of that $2 million. He better get to work. You know, it's on. And then if you get interviews, then it's on you. Like, you can lead a horse to water, but eventually you got to drink it. Like, some of these coaches that get these interviews, I don't feel like they can bitch all they want. Like, if I understand if you're mad you're not even getting interviews, but if you get interviews, it's on you to close it, right? If I set you up on a blind date, you know, you can take it from there. It's the hardest part is just getting the date sometimes, right? The hardest part is just getting the interview, just getting someone to talk to you. Once they do, then it's on you to close the deal. You know, then a lot of the fluff doesn't matter. Can you sit in front of a guy and sell him? Can you sell yourself? Selling yourself is a big deal just in life. You know, especially when you're talking about a job that's going to pay you $5 to $8 million a year, you better be able to sit in front of this owner and sell yourself. Now you can say, oh, you just wanted to be a politician, Middlecoff? No, but there is salesmanship to any job. I don't give a shit if you're a coach or working on Wall Street. You better be able to sell yourself in front of the guy that's going to cut your checks. And one thing's clear, a lot of coaches over the years, I think, that have gotten interviews and never gotten jobs, struggle in that environment. They feel more comfortable interviewing with a head coach to be a coordinator, right? Or just talking players and X's and O's. Can you talk about all the other stuff? Because that does matter being a head coach. Like, can you handle controversy? What happens when curveballs come out of left field? What happens when your best player gets a DUI or domestic violence? You know, what happens when the media starts peppering you? Like, it's difficult. And the owners want to know, you know? So, yeah, I think there's a lot of jealousy. Who benefits from the other more, Brady or Belichick? Considering Belichick was not successful before the GOAT was a starter, doesn't he need to win a ring after Brady? He's had much easier time than every other coach having Brady. That's a fact. Thanks, John. Love the show. Well, I think it's probably a double-edged sword, because to say that Belichick had no success, he didn't make the playoffs as a head coach in Cleveland. And he was widely considered as by far the best defensive mind in the game in the mid-80s. Parcells in the 30 for 30 gave Belichick the credit for the special game plans that shut down Walsh in the West Coast offense. Like, said that Belichick had the ideas. He admitted to it. Now, would Belichick have become Belichick without Brady? Probably not. But I think this one is as close to a mutual relationship as we've ever seen. I can't speak on the Walsh-Montana one as much when it first started, because I wasn't even born. But this one, to see the maturation of the two, like, when Brady first started, they were a defensive-oriented team. I mean, those first couple years, Brewski, Rodney Harrison, you know, Asante, Richard Seymour, like, they were stacked on D. Stacked. For really, it wasn't until 07, the 06 team, when Brady became the guy. So three of his five Super Bowls, now it may be six by Sunday's end, but have come with defensive-oriented teams. Now, Brady was good, you know, by the time the second and third Super Bowl, but remember the argument was, like, Brady and Manning, even when Manning didn't have a Super Bowl, and even when he got his one, it's like, well, Manning has to do more. You can't even argue that anymore. So, I think they go pretty hand-in-hand. You know, as coaches and, you know, the best coaches will tell you, there's never been a great coach or a great player. So, Brady was probably destined to be a great player. His drive, his will to win, his work ethic. But if you don't put him with Belichick, maybe he goes somewhere, finds a way to get on the field, but only wins one Super Bowl. You know, maybe he never gets one. Maybe he just goes to the Browns, or, you know, goes to a really shitty team and just never gets over the top. So I just think it's the greatest combination we've ever seen, and I really think it's borderline impossible to quantify which one needed the other one more. Brady was a 6th-round pick. So to think if he goes to some other team that he might have been on practice squads for a couple years. He might never have gotten the chance to play. I mean, I give Belichick credit for a couple things. One, just drafting him. You can say, well, they passed on him five rounds. They still took him. And remember, they didn't. They kept like multiple quarterbacks. Like he was like the third or fourth guy. They didn't cut him because they saw something in him. And then by the second year, he was their backup. So I don't know. I mean, I give Belichick a lot of credit, and I give Brady a lot of credit. That's why I give 50-50. They need each other. I'm a hardcore Cardinals fan from Australia. Are you concerned about Josh Rosen? I loved him coming out of UCLA and thought he threw some dimes early in the season. However, his play appeared to deteriorate as the season progressed. Do you think he could make a jump like Jared Goff did in year two, Fisher to McVay, year one to two? I think you have to look at the season like Jared Goff, his rookie year, and just throw it out the window. The offensive line was hideous. The coaching staff was a joke. I mean, Steve Wilks was a joke coach. Deserved to get fired after 1 year. Like, had no clue what was going on. He had multiple offensive coordinators in 1 year. And the offensive line, you talk to anyone in the NFL, was by far the worst in the NFL. So I'm just throwing this out. I'm a Josh Rosen guy. Anyone that's been listening since last draft knows I really like him. I didn't watch that much of him the second half of the season. But the little I saw, yeah, you're right. His play was more down than up. But again, I think you have to just hope that Cliff Kingsbury turns out to be a good coach. The one thing you know, he's an offensive guy, and he's a quarterback. So you hired a quarterback coach that's the offensive play caller and the head coach. What else can Josh Rosen ask for? You know, now it might have to curtail, like he can't move. Like Josh Rosen is a pocket quarterback only. You know, when he coached Mahomes in college, Mahomes was athletic. That's not Josh Rosen's deal. So you might have to curtail this offense a little bit, but they still got David Johnson, who's going to be healthy this year. The young receiver they took from A&M, Christian Kirk, showed some flashes when I watched this year. They got to get better offensive linemen. It's why I'd trade back, be really aggressive in free agency, and with they need offensive line. You have to protect Josh Rosen. So yeah, I mean, I am bullish on Josh Rosen. By no means would I write him off because of a crappy first year. He was way better. I repeat, way more talented than Jared Goff coming out of college. Now, Jared was really calm, cool, and collected. Had never been hurt. Was clearly unfazed by the dysfunction with the Rams. But I'm by no means am giving up on Rosen. I know you typically take people's questions regarding the sports and the future of podcasts, but I have a different kind of question. I'm looking to start up my own podcast. I've been watching and studying sports my whole life and want to take it a step further. Any words of wisdom or advice on how to get started? Any recommendations on equipment? I think I've answered this question before. I just have this thing called a Blue Mic. You can get them at Best Buy. I record this before I send it up the ladder on GarageBand on an iMac Pro. It's a couple years old. And my recommendation for anyone that wants to do media stuff, like there's never been an easier time. Instagram, YouTube, Twitter. Start doing your own videos. Hell, I do videos right now from my home office. Make money off it. So like you can do it. There's never been an easier time to try out different things in this business if you wanted to get into that. You literally can start a blog, you know, start a video blog. I think they're called a vlog. Put it on YouTube. Just do stuff. Get reps. You know, the more reps you get, and we talk about this all the time, but it helps. You know, you get better at anything the more you do it. And luckily, there are a ton of avenues. So hell, just grab your iPad, grab your phone, record, start talking. You know, if you want to talk sports, record it, post it. You know, it can feel weird at first, but eventually you're just like, whatever. I'm just talking about Brady. You know, who cares? I'm looking at this phone 3 feet away from my face. You know, you feel like a loser the first time you do it. And you're like, well, just, you know, and the check comes. You're like, oh, okay, I see this working. But in all seriousness, yeah, just start. You just need a Mac, iPad, a phone. You know, the cameras on the phones are pretty good now. The cameras, I got to get a new iPad, but the cameras on the iPads are good too. So get on it. Appreciate everyone listening. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Have a great weekend. And again, I thank everyone for the support. Keep listening. And I'll talk to you next week.